Good afternoon. I call to order this remote hearing of the House Commerce Committee and ask Mr. Dockendorff to take the roll.
Chair Stevenson.
Present.
Vice Chair Cotiza Watoon.
Present.
Representative O'Driscoll. Representative Barr. Representative Carlson.
I'm here.
Representative Davney.
Present.
Representative Elkins. Representative Haley.
Present.
Representative Kegel.
Present.
Representative Lee.
Lee present.
Representative Lilly.
Lilly present.
Representative Lislegard.
Present.
Representative Lucero.
Present.
Representative Olson.
Present.
Representative Farr.
Present.
Representative Rasmussen.
Rasmussen present.
Representative Richardson.
Present.
Representative Tice.
Tice present.
And Representative O'Driscoll.
O'Driscoll present.
Representative Barr.
Here.
Representative Elkins.
Elkins present.
Thank you.
Right. We have a quorum. The first item of business is to approve our minutes from March 2nd, 2022. Representative Cotiza Watoon, do you have a motion?
Mr. Chair, I would move approval of the March 2nd minutes.
Representative Cotiza Watoon moves approval of the minutes from March 2nd, 2022. Any discussion to that motion? Seeing none, all in favor say aye. Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The motion prevails, and the minutes for March 2nd, 2022 are approved. And with that, I will hand the virtual gavel to our esteemed vice chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members and members of the public, the only item on today's agenda is House File 778. Chair Stevenson, would you like to move your bill?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would move House File 778 be recommended to be re-referred to the State Government Finance and Elections Committee.
Chair Stevenson moves House File 778 be recommended to be re-referred to the State Government Finance and Elections Committee.
And Madam Chair,
in a minute.
Yes, Madam Chair, I have an amendment that gets the bill in the shape I want the committee to consider it, so I would move the DE2 amendment.
Rep. Stevenson moves the adoption of the DE2 amendment to get the bill in the shape that he would like the committee to consider today. Members, do we have any discussion to the amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor, please say aye.
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 Any opposed? The motion prevails and the DE2 amendment is adopted. Chair Stevenson, to your bill.
Members, this bill legalizes sports betting in Minnesota, but let's be clear from the outset that sports betting is already happening in Minnesota. We have a robust black market here. People just use shady websites, digital workarounds, and other means to place bets. What this bill is about is creating a legal marketplace that will displace that black market, and in doing so, provide consumer protection, ensure the integrity of the game, and limit money laundering and other illegal activity. In 2018, the Supreme Court struck down longstanding federal law prohibiting sports betting in states other than Nevada and New Jersey. Since then, over 30 states have legalized sports betting. All of Minnesota's neighboring states, including Canada, have legal sports betting. This is an idea whose time has come. Having said that, it's important to get it right. This will be the biggest change to our state's gambling laws in 40 years. And so during the interim, I engaged with every stakeholder I could. I have traveled the state from the Red Lake Nation in northwestern Minnesota to sports data companies located in downtown Minneapolis, listening and trying to develop a Minnesota-specific model for legal sports betting. During that process, I consulted with all 11 of the tribal nations located in Minnesota, along with our professional sport teams, University of Minnesota, sports betting companies, and experts on problem gaming. I also examined the law in the other states that have legal sports betting, and I even took a field trip to Iowa. The product of all of this work is a bill before you today. The bill includes both brick-and-mortar sports betting at tribal casinos, as well as a statewide mobile sports betting operated by the tribes in partnership with commercial operators. To put that in plain terms, if this bill passes, Minnesotans will be able to visit sports betting lounges at casinos all across Minnesota, and they'll be able to wager on sports on the smartphones anywhere in the state. We would tax mobile sports betting at levels consistent or below states around the country. The money generated from this tax will be dedicated to three causes. First, the regulations and consumer protections necessary to make sure that sports betting is fair and doesn't influence what is happening on the field, particularly at the amateur level. Second, we devote 40% of the tax revenue generated to addressing and treating problem gaming. We need to be honest here. Most people can gamble without issue, but for a small subset, it's a real problem. We would devote more resources than ever before to confronting this problem. Finally, 40% of the tax revenue raised would go to funding youth sports and other youth programming across the state, but with particular emphasis on communities experiencing a high level of juvenile crime. Juvenile crime is at unacceptable levels in Minnesota. And while there's no single cause or one single solution, we know that when kids are busy playing sports, they're not getting into trouble doing something else. It's taking a lot of work to get the bill to this point, and there's still a lot of work to be done. Members from both parties have come to me with ideas about how to improve this bill, and I'm very pleased that we have bipartisan support. And in fact, Representative Garofalo, the subject matter expert on sports gaming in the Minnesota legislature, is with us today, just in case I screw something up. I'm very open to including any ideas that members have. We have six additional committee stops in front of us, so I encourage members to keep those ideas coming and to keep the bill moving. And Madam Chair, I know there are a number of members who have amendments today that they'd like to discuss.
Thank you for that introduction of the bill, Mr. Chair. As you mentioned, we do have a number of amendments. Representative O'Driscoll, you have offered the A3 amendment. Would you like to move and describe it?
Thank you, Madam Chair. The A3 amendment refers to the provision in the DE1 amendment, that we brought forward that has to do with are we on the A2 or the A3? Yeah. Madam Chair?
The A3.
Okay, very good. I just want to make sure I open it up so I do not get this incorrect here. So what we're looking at with the A3 amendment, there's a provision that talks about using part of the state's proceeds on this to target those funds toward disadvantaged areas of high criminal activity and other. And what I'd like to do is I'd like to get a ratio on this. It doesn't describe where those funds would go, and I want to make sure that disproportionately we don't favor one area of the state over others. That again, if we're going to have statewide gaming on this, that it covers the state in whole. And so what I've done is I've said 50% to the 7-county metro area and 50% of those dedicated funds to greater Minnesota, the remaining 80 counties across the state. And so, Madam Chair, that is the full extent of the amendment.
Thank you, Representative O'Driscoll. Chair Stevenson?
Members, I'm going to ask that you oppose this amendment. I certainly have no objection to the idea that we need to make sure that the funds that are distributed across the state. I just take issue with the 50% number. 50% of the population doesn't live outside the 7-county metro area. Representative Driscoll is with me on the redistricting committee. We know that, in fact, 50% of the population is in the 5-county metro, let alone the 7-county. So that's not a fair reflection of the population. It's not a fair reflection of the areas that are experiencing high levels of juvenile crime. Nor is it a reflection of the amount of money that would be paid in by people using the mobile sports betting. So I don't think it's a fair number, and I'm happy to continue to work with you, Representative Driscoll, as we go through this to try and find a place that makes more sense. But at 50%, I can't support it.
Members, any further discussion to the A3 amendment? Good. Seeing none, all in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed?
No.
No.
The motion does not prevail and the amendment is not adopted. Now, Representative O'Driscoll, you have offered the A4 amendment as well. Would you like to move and describe the A4?
Thank you, Madam Chair. The A4 amendment deals with the Well, let me build a bigger picture here. We already have other legal gaming in the state of Minnesota, and one of those areas is charitable gaming for our local fire departments, youth hockey associations, VFWs, legions, and the like, who do a lot of great work in their local communities through these gaming that they're involved in. They are also one of the very highest taxed groups, where they do not take any deductions. They take their revenues times the tax rate, send a check to the state of Minnesota. What the A4 amendment endeavors to do is, because we have a finite amount of dollars that will be available for entertainment to the state of Minnesota, and then we further parse that down into the area of gaming, I suspect that some of the revenues that people, or I should say some of the funds that people would be paying, those revenues would be going over to the type of gaming that the bill author is advocating here in sports betting and the like. And so what I'm trying to do is provide some tax relief with funds that the state of Minnesota will be receiving under this bill to be able to allow for the charitable gaming to get a break on this, as well as we continue to apparently look to expand the type of gaming that's here, and again, with those finite dollars. So it's going to provide some relief to some folks that, again, do a lot of good things in our communities with their charitable gaming right now as well.
Thank you, Representative O'Driscoll. Chair Stevenson?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members of the committee, I would ask that you oppose this amendment. The amendment pretty dramatically expands the scope of the bill because it brings in tax rates on charitable gaming, and this is about sports betting. I'd also just remind members that 40% of the revenue derived from sports betting I'm dedicating to grant programs by youth sports. And while not all charitable gaming supports youth sports, a significant amount of it is related to youth sports and youth programming. And so a lot of the organizations that engage in charitable gaming will benefit from this bill because they'll be eligible for the grant money that we're providing through the Amateur Sports Commission. So I'd ask for a no vote.
Members, any further discussion to the A4 amendment?
Madam Chair, as the amendment author, I want to also just point out that fire relief associations, fire departments, and others in smaller communities in greater Minnesota use this as a way as well to supplement their budgets for being able to provide critical services to their constituents. So it is a far-reaching benefit that we see through the charitable gaming, and just, again, trying to help some of these folks maybe catch a break. We've been trying to work on it for a number of years here in the legislature. And since we're talking about gaming, and this is the Commerce Committee, which does have jurisdiction over charitable gaming, I thought I would offer the amendment today to again keep that in front of the members of the commission and actually of the committee as we endeavor to move forward here today.
Thank you, Representative O'Driscoll. Members, any further discussion to the A4? All in favor, please say aye.
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 Those opposed?
No.
No.
The motion does not prevail and the amendment is not adopted. Representative Rasmussen, you've offered the A2 amendment. Would you like to move and describe the A2?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yes, I'll move the A2 amendment. The bill before the committee today, especially on the mobile sports betting provisions in the bill, represents a major expansion of gambling here in Minnesota. And a number of the states that have allowed sports betting since the Supreme Court ruling have started or continue to have on-premise only or to have some in-person requirement as a part of mobile betting. I believe that that is a smart way to start mobile sports betting here in Minnesota is by requiring some in-person check-in. The A2 amendment would require in-person registration for mobile sports betting in addition to in-person deposits and withdrawals. This would provide greater protections as sports betting starts here in Minnesota to consumers. And so would ask for member support.
Members, I apologize. I have an unstable internet connection. Chair Stevenson, would you care to respond?
Thank you, Madam Chair and Representative Rasmussen. I would ask members respectfully to vote against this amendment. The language that's being described here, as Representative Rasmussen alluded to, has been adopted in other states, but pretty notably, every time they adopt it, it's pretty quickly removed because it's not as workable. I think in Minnesota, it would result in disadvantaging people who live far away from a tribal lands. I also think it would disadvantage tribal nations that are located far away from major population centers. I certainly, and I want to stress, certainly do share the concern about problem gaming that I think this is in part designed to address. I just think that there are ways that we can deal with that issue other than this language, which has proven unworkable in other states. So I would ask members to oppose it.
Madam Chair.
Representative Rasmussen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And thank you, Representative Stevenson, for your comments and for your commitment to continue working on how to address problem gaming in this bill as it continues. The only additional information I would share with committee members is that two states that border Minnesota, Wisconsin, and South Dakota, you know, currently have on-premise only. They have no sports betting, and that's true in a number of other states as well. And so, you know, the bill before the body truly does represent kind of full unrestricted mobile betting. And I think it would be wise for this committee and for the legislature to consider having some in-person requirements as we start down this, you know, potentially a major expansion in gaming and gambling here in the state of Minnesota. And so I look forward to continuing to working on, you know, this as it goes through different committee stops. And Madam Chair, would just request member support of the A2 amendment.
Senator Rasmussen, members, any further discussion to the A2? All right, seeing none, all those in favor, please say aye.
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 Those opposed?
Aye.
No.
Nay.
No.
The motion does not prevail and the amendment is not adopted. Representative Rasmussen, you've also offered the A6 amendment. Would you like to move the A6 and describe it?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yes, I will move the A6 amendment. The A6 amendment, members, I think is one of the more you know, common sense things that we could do with this bill today. The current bill before the committee allows anyone 18 years of age or older to participate in sports betting, including mobile sports betting. The vast majority of states that allow sports betting require the eligible gamblers to be 21 years of age or older. It's my understanding that only four states allow sports betting for 18-year-olds in the country. The amendment would require and move the age for mobile betting only to 21. So this amendment does not interfere with tribal sovereignty. The on-premise age is not impacted by this amendment, only for mobile betting. And I think, members, this is a common sense protection that the vast majority of other states have adopted to prevent, help prevent problem gambling, especially for young adults.
Thank you, Representative Rasmussen. Chair Stevenson?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Rasmussen, I share your concern about 18, 19, and 20-year-olds with relation to gambling and sports wagering in particular with mobile. As I have said, I'm concerned about problem gaming, and we know that as people have not fully developed brains when they are 18 and 19 and 20, they are particularly susceptible to making decisions that are not so great. The problem with just doing a straight ban down to 18 is that, as I alluded to in my opening remarks, there's a very robust black market available, and it's easy to access. It's not difficult at all. Your average 18-year-old could definitely figure out how to place a bet on Bovada or otherwise engage in this activity if they wanted to. The virtue of having them, giving them access to the legitimate market, is that you can place controls on it that perhaps prevent the worst outcomes from happening, and also gives you access to data and other methods to deal with it. So I am searching. I will admit to you that I don't think that this bill has found it yet, the right way to handle 18, 19, and 20-year-olds. And it may end up being that we can't find a way other than a straight ban and going to 21. And I'm not today saying that I'm opposed to going to 21. I'm just asking for more time to work on this. I have ideas including limiting the amount that 18-year-olds can deposit on a weekly and a monthly basis, limiting how much they can bet. And there are, I think, probably other creative ideas that we could have that would allow them to still have access to the legitimate market so they're not forced into the black market while holding off some of the bigger concerns. So my request to Representative Rasmussen would be that he consider withdrawing the amendment today. If he's not willing to do that, I would ask members to vote no today, but with the understanding that we're going to continue working on this and, in fact, might add in the 21-year-old ban in a later committee stop if we are unable to find a better solution.
Senator Rasmussen.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Stevenson, for the comments and for the commitment to continue working on this as this bill moves through committees. I would just ask members to support this common sense amendment. The vast majority of states, you know, have taken similar action. And even, you know, as Representative Stevenson mentioned, this bill does have additional committee stops. And I would view this amendment at minimum as a placeholder for us to put in the bill to show that it is not the intention of the bill author or of members of this committee to have it just be at 18 without additional protections and safeguards. So I would request members support the A6 amendment.
Members, any further discussion to the A6 amendment? Okay, seeing none, all those in favor, please say aye.
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 And those opposed, please say nay.
No.
No.
No. No.
The amendment does not prevail. The motion does not prevail and the amendment is not adopted. We will now move on to our testifiers. First in the list, I have Andy Plato, and Jake Grassel is on deck. Mr. Plato, please introduce yourself and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Andy Plato, and I am the Executive Director of the Minnesota Indian Gaming Association, or MIGA. MIGA represents 10 of the 11 tribes in Minnesota and appreciates the ability to provide comments on the DE amendment to House File 778. Chair Stevenson's bill to authorize sports wagering. Since the federal law prohibiting states from legalizing sports wagering was overturned in 2018, Minnesota tribes and their leaders have watched closely as other states, including those surrounding Minnesota, have provided a legal marketplace for sports bettors. Of particular importance has been the impact sports wagering has had on other tribal gaming operations, as gaming provides the economic lifeblood of tribal governments, tribal communities, and the tens of thousands of Minnesotans they employ. Upon review, in many cases, the impact of sports wagering expansion has been a positive one, but only when the authorizing legislation is carefully crafted to ensure that tribes play a critical role in bringing the marketplace to consumers. Tribal leaders are now reviewing the Delete Everything amendment and hope to soon be as comfortable with the details as they currently are with the general framework. But in concept, the DE does recognize that tribes, as the state's gaming experts, are best positioned to operate Minnesota's sports betting market, both in retail and mobile environments. For these reasons, I'm pleased to ask the Commerce Committee to approve the bill today. Tribes will continue to offer their input in good faith as the bill moves through the process. Tribal leaders and staff would like to offer our thanks to Chair Stevenson for his respectful engagement on this issue and wish to continue our conversations with the legislature and other stakeholders to ensure any expansion of off-reservation gaming benefits both tribes and the Minnesota sports betting public. Madam Chair and members, thank you again for the ability to provide comments and your willingness to consider tribal voices throughout this process. I stand ready, along with other tribal representatives here today, to answer any questions you may have. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Plato. Next, Jake Grassel, and on deck, Grant Iden. Please introduce yourself, Mr. Grassel, and proceed with your testimony.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, my name is Jake Grassel. I'm here today on behalf of
Citizens Against Gambling expansion to encourage you to say no to this sports gambling bill. This bill, if implemented, will result in the largest expansion of gambling in Minnesota in almost 40 years and will be one of the most liberal sports betting bills in the nation, and we must make sure it's done right. I understand the arguments for legalizing sports gambling that have been put forward, and they seem meritorious at first blush. The, you know, that profiting off of currently unregulated market of illegal gambling. However, the costs are too high and the gains seem to be too little. Problem gambling has serious costs to our states. I appreciate that the author is taking that into consideration. But more importantly, it is a serious threat to the livelihoods of teens and young adults. And as was previously mentioned, it's important to note that Minnesota's law, as written, will be for 18-year-olds, whereas all surrounding states and almost all in the country are at 21. And we do encourage that the bill pushes that age to 21 for mobile betting. Because studies are clear that the closer you live to a gambling terminal, the more likely you are to become addicted. That gamblers who bet online have even higher problem gambling rates at 18.2%. And the younger children start gambling, the more likely it is they will become habitual and problem gamblers. This bill combines all three of those. It allows teenagers to gamble at their desks, puts a gambling terminal in the pocket of pretty much every Minnesotan, and it's online. This is a serious bill and needs serious long-term examination. We need to take our time studying and researching what this truly means for Minnesota, not just the good, but also the bad. That means open hearings where nonpartisan experts are brought in to analyze the issue, that it's deeply studied, rather than trying to rush a bill through the legislature in, you know, less than 11 weeks. While I understand many want to legalize this activity because it is fun and bring it out of the black market and put regulations around it, the consequences could be severe, and therefore I encourage the committee to more fully study this issue before moving it forward this session. Thank you for having me, and I stand open to any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Grassel. Next, Brant Iden, please introduce yourself and proceed with your testimony. And on deck is Ryan Hamilton.
Chairman Stevenson and members of the House Commerce Committee, thank you for the opportunity to testify regarding House Bill 778 today. My name is Brant Iden, head of U.S. Government Affairs for Sport Radar. Prior to joining this amazing team, I was a member of the Michigan Legislature and sponsor of the 2019 Lawful Internet Gaming Act, Sports Wagering Act, and legislation regulating daily fantasy games. Now I have the pleasure of working with Sport Radar, the global leader in providing sports data for the purposes of creating betting markets and media services. We capture live, in-depth, play-by-play sports data and deliver it in real time to clients in media, betting, and sports entertainment. Our nonprofit intelligence and investigation services proudly support law enforcement, state and federal regulators, and over 80 sports governing bodies worldwide in efforts to monitor global betting patterns, detect match fixing, and combat sports corruption. We are an international company headquartered here in Minneapolis with over 300 team members in the Twin Cities and more than 2,000 globally. And I appreciate the shout out and from the chair and welcome any of you anytime to our offices downtown. Mr. Chairman, I would like to commend you for your excellent leadership on this legislation, and we look forward to continuing to work with you and your colleagues throughout the development of this policy. To that end, Sport Radar is the in-state industry expert on the topic of sports wagering, as we occupy the central position within the betting ecosystem as a sports wagering supplier, the data engine which powers sportsbooks. Therefore, given that we are a critical component to the overall operations, we believe that creating a specific sports wagering supplier license within this statute is in the best interest of all those within our industry. Presently, 32 jurisdictions have or are in the process of implementing some type of regulatory structure for sports betting, and with that comes 32 separate regulatory agencies. As you can imagine, some operate more effectively than others. As such, we have been communicating with your office and other industry stakeholders to craft supplier licensure language, which is the result of best practices pulled from states throughout the country. And it would be our hope that this model language be inserted into House Bill 778. Very simply, this language would clearly define a sports wagering supplier and the issuance of a sports wagering supplier license. It would also address issues that have arisen in other states concerning provisional licensure, transparency of company ownership, and disclosure information. Defining these licensure requirements in statute provide clear direction and guidance to the regulatory agency when issuing licensing. Moreover, this language creates equity for all companies seeking to obtain a supplier license by establishing a uniform set of guidelines for all suppliers in this rapidly evolving industry. In short, we look forward to continuing to work with you and this committee to strengthen this bill by adding a clear and concise sports betting supplier licensing definition, encapsulating in this language best practices from around the country would ensure that Minnesota is a regulatory leader for our industry and would become a model for other states grappling with sports betting legislation. Additionally, solidifying this language in statute would confer clear legislative intent to the regulatory agency when promulgating rules and limit any potential possibilities for the commission to misinterpret the explicit desire of the legislature. Again, thank you for the opportunity to testify today. I'd be happy to answer any questions, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Iden. Next, Ryan Hamilton, you can introduce yourself and proceed with your testimony. On deck is Pat Gibbs.
Good afternoon, Chair Stevenson, Vice Chair, and members of the committee. My name is Ryan Hamilton, Government Relations Associate for the Minnesota Catholic Conference, the public policy voice of the Catholic Church in Minnesota. We oppose the anytime, anywhere gambling that House File 778 would bring to Minnesota. This bill goes way too far. It caters to the entertainment whims of a privileged few while exposing Minnesota's youth to unprecedented access and exposure to gambling. Now, games of chance are not in themselves morally unacceptable, but gambling does become morally unacceptable when it is offered in such a way that proliferates cycles of exploitation and deprivation. And that is exactly what online sports betting does. We aren't talking about bingo or a friendly wager amongst friends or even charitable gaming. Commercialized sports gambling, particularly when available through one's smartphone, is like an addictive drug that harms lives, families, and the common good. The entire effort to legalize online sports gambling is setting Minnesota up to lose. Research has revealed that sports betting can be an alluring path to the onset or the maintenance of gambling problems. The National Council on Problem Gambling reports that sports bettors are at least twice as likely to develop a gambling problem as gamblers in general. And when sports gambling is conducted online, the rate of problems is even higher. Research also shows that gambling is especially addictive for young gamblers who are attracted to the instant gratification and the allure of easy money. The University of Minnesota estimates that 10% of its students are already problem gamblers, and reports that college students are 2 to 3 times more likely to develop problem gambling than older adults. House File 778 would effectively make Minnesota the land of anytime, anywhere gambling by putting a bookie in every living room, every dorm room, and every high school senior's pocket. This bill would make Minnesota the odds-on favorite in a race to the bottom. It should not pass out of this committee. Please vote no. Thank you for the opportunity to join me today.
Thank you, Mr. Hamilton. Pat Gibbs, please introduce yourself and proceed with your testimony. And on deck is Douglas Franzen.
Madam Chair, members of the House Commerce, Finance, and Policy Committee, thank you for the opportunity to provide testimony today related to authorizing and regulating mobile sports wagering in Minnesota. And thank you to Representatives Stevenson and Garofalo for your continued willingness to work with my client and other stakeholders to create a sports wagering structure that works for Minnesota. My name is Pat Gibbs. I'm an attorney with the law firm Orrick, Harrington & Sutcliffe, and it is my pleasure to serve as National Public Policy Counsel for the Sports Betting Alliance, or SBA. The SBA is a trade organization comprised of many of the top operators in the mobile sports wagering industry: DraftKings, FanDuel, Bally's, BetMGM, and Fanatics. Together, our members advocate for competitive mobile sports wagering in the United States. And although I represent the SBA and state capitals across the country, I'm particularly pleased to be here with you today, albeit virtually, as I grew up in Bloomington, graduated from Jefferson High School and the University of Minnesota, and am a native Minnesotan. So it's great to be home. The Sports Betting Alliance has been involved in nearly every state legislature's conversations on this topic since 2018, when, as Representative Stevenson mentioned, the Supreme Court struck down the Professional and Amateur Sports Protection Act, an unconstitutional federal law that forbade states from deciding for themselves whether to authorize sports betting. And we look forward to continuing to work with legislators and stakeholders in Minnesota, serving as a resource for data, insight, and best practices or policies learned from studying the various frameworks adopted in other states. Through this experience, a few core tenets for establishing a successful sports wagering framework have become clear. And when I say successful in this context, I mean the market, one, provides steady tax revenue to the state, two, provides consumers with choice in terms of high quality products and bet offerings, three, allows brick and mortar and mobile sports books to profitably develop into a sustainable market, and four, pulls users from the existing illegal offshore sports books to the regulated operators who follow the law and offer strong consumer protections and resources. So let me quickly address three of these tenets. The first of these tenets is that a successful successful sports wagering framework must include mobile. States with both brick and mortar and mobile sports betting see 85 to 90% of revenue come from bets placed on mobile devices. Additionally, studies estimate that 1.1 million Minnesotans place $2.5 billion in illegal sports wagers annually using offshore sites on their phones and computers right now. Often users do not even realize that these are illegal due to how easy they are to access. And in order to pull users away from these products and into the legal regulated space, the legal regulated market must offer the same level of convenience and offerings as the illegal market. The second of these tenets is that the mobile sports betting marketplace must be competitive, meaning approximately eight or more operators. Competition in the marketplace not only drives technological innovation, but also ensures that bettors can select from among a variety of mobile platforms and shop around for the best odds and offerings. Industry data shows that markets do not fully develop when users are limited to fewer platform options, and consumer choice pulls people out of the illegal market and into the regulated and taxed legal market. The third and final of these tenets is that licensing and market economics must be reasonable. This is not just how you get to eight or more operators providing consumer choice, but also how you track the top national sports betting brands that your constituents want. In a tethered licensing model like the one proposed in this bill, the mobile operator first negotiates a market access fee with the tribe, second pays fees associated with the licensure to the state, and then third pays a tax to the state. These all must be considered in a totality. High market access fees and our high tax rate would hamstring the proposed Minnesota sports betting market and leave most Minnesotans in the illegal market. That's because revenue that would typically be spent on innovation, creating the best customer experience, and advertising or promotions for consumers, all of which are critical tools in differentiating the legal market from the illegal market, would instead be dedicated to fees and taxes for the right to simply operate in the state. The illegal operators don't pay market access fees or taxes. Therefore, in order to compete, fees and taxes must be reasonable for the legal regulated market. With a competitive mobile market, consumer choice, and reasonable fees and taxes, Minnesota looks to create a vibrant mobile sports betting market with $30 million plus in tax revenue to the state annually. Data from other states have shown that deviations from this model inhibit the growth and sustainability of the market. Thank you for allowing me the opportunity to speak with you today. I would be happy to answer any questions that you may have.
Thank you, Mr. Gibbs. Next up, Douglas Franzen, you can introduce yourself and proceed with your testimony. And finally, we will have Benita Fitzgerald Mosley on deck.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Chair Stevenson, members of the committee, my name is Doug Franzen, and I'm here on behalf of Running Aces Harness Track. We're a part of the horse racing industry in Minnesota. And I would like to point out a problem with this bill and a solution. Our industry, the horse racing industry, is tremendously important to Minnesota. That importance has really been emphasized through a economic impact statement commissioned and performed by the University of Minnesota. It's a five-year-old study, but it established that we provide over $400 million per year in a positive economic impact to the state of Minnesota. And we believe that the study is somewhat dated and it would be significantly higher impact. So it is an important part of our economy. It's also a very fragile industry. Through our history, you're probably aware of this. Our firm, Running Aces, it was purchased out of foreclosure in 2010. And over the years, Canterbury has had its challenges. And I want to be very clear, I'm not speaking on behalf of Canterbury Park. I'm speaking on behalf of Running Aces. It's fragile. It's not a high market endeavor for us. It's important to the horse breeders, the racers, the agricultural components, all sorts of folks. The state legislature and the people of Minnesota have recognized this importance. Most importantly, in 1982, by constitutional amendment, the Minnesota citizens, by a very strong vote, amended our constitution to permit wagering, pari-mutuel wagering on horse races at that time. That wasn't enough. Frankly, a racetrack cannot be sustainable relying only on the revenue from its horses. So in 2000, the legislature authorized a card club for the tracks. In 2016, the legislature authored something called advanced deposit wagering. Some of you may have been involved in that discussion, which is roughly analogous to mobile sports betting. It's people can remotely bet on a pool. It's somewhat complicated, but nonetheless, it was helpful. And in 2018, the legislature permitted the two tracks to gain some revenue through simulcasting, whereby people could come to our tracks and make wagers on the Kentucky Derby or any race around the country. And I think those responses over time show a public policy recognition of the importance of our industry. And I'll get to the problem in a second. This background, I believe, is necessary. Mr. Pladel correctly said that the tribes do have the expertise to basically have in-house bricks and mortar and mobile sports betting. We agree with that, but we do as well through the advanced wagering, advanced deposit wagering, through our betting at the horse races, through our highly regulated card club. We're well experienced not only with the technology involved, but the national platforms that would be involved in this as well. We have relationships with those folks. Our problem is I can simply find no public policy reason to exclude the two racetracks from being licensed as sports betting venues. I've really looked at that and scratched my head and had numerous discussion with tribal representatives. Chair Stevenson was kind enough to take a meeting with me and my partner. And we've talked to basically a lot of folks about this, and none of them could really tell me why we're not there. The consequence of that problem is significant. And it relates back to another point that Representative Pladel made, that to exclude the two racetracks from sports betting does significant harm. And what happens is, again, I'll refer to Mr. Plato's testimony, and again, I will say he was absolutely correct. I believe he has mentioned the impact on other gaming. And that is true. The lifeblood of our purses, the money we pay to the horses and the horsemen, and the basically operating the track, is driven by the card club, where folks can go play poker or blackjack or something like that. Again, in a highly regulated environment by the state of Minnesota. But what we have seen with the advent of sports betting is traditional card clubs and casinos have had a dramatic drop in gross revenue, while sports betting has taken off like a rocket in those jurisdictions. I have a couple examples. New Jersey was mentioned. The Borgata is a very large casino. And in the period of 2019 to 2021, its gaming revenue was down 20%. In Valley Forge, at the same period in New Jersey, sports betting increased by 700%. So your traditional table game was down 20%. Sports betting was up 700%. In Pennsylvania, the Valley Forge table gaming down 15%. And sports betting at the same time increased 185%. I believe Iowa was mentioned as a neighboring state, and I also believe a number of legislators have crossed the border to bet on the Vikings to win the Super Bowl or something equally rational. We've looked at Iowa, and during the time of sports betting, during the 2019 to 2021 period, Prairie Meadows, a harness track in Des Moines, saw its table drop down 21% and its simulcast down 39% in that period with the growth of sports betting. Now, if you contrast that with states that do have sports betting, no sports betting, for example, Minnesota right now, in the same period of time, 2019 to 2021, we have grown from 2019. We have moved forward. So the significance of this drop is great. I mentioned earlier we work on very slim margins. And frankly, the gross revenue, if we suffered a drop of 20%, in our table games and 30 or 40% in our simulcasting, I doubt very much either track would continue to exist. And that's too important for Minnesota. So my ask exactly is, one of the testifiers talked about promoting competition, and I asked that, if competition is good, which I believe it is, it makes a ton of sense to include the two tracks on equal terms with the tribes. Our position is not anti-sports betting. It is not anti-tribes. We have great relationships with them. But this exclusion could be a downfall. And again, I'll conclude by saying this exclusion is unjustified by any public policy rationale. So my ask is that we be included and the two tracks have a license. With that, Madam Chair, members, thank you for your time, and I will stand for any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Franzen. Finally, we have Benita Fitzgerald Mosley. Please introduce yourself and proceed with your testimony.
Needed to take myself off mute, I apologize. Good afternoon, Madam Chair, Representative Stevenson, and members of the House Commerce, Finance, and Policy Committee. I'm Benita Fitzgerald Mosley. I'm the Vice President of Community and Impact at League Apps, a sports technology company, and where we have 35 of our youth sports organizations and their customers there in Minnesota. I'm also the Executive Director of the Play Sports Coalition, which we represent nearly 4,000 esports organizations across the country. 65 of those members are in Minnesota. I'm the former CEO of Laureus USA, which supports esports nonprofits and underserved communities. And finally, I am an athlete, former athlete myself. I'm an Olympic gold medalist in track and field and the 100-meter hurdles from the 84 Olympic Games. I would like to just reinforce the written testimony that we submitted, both League Apps and on behalf of the Play Sports Coalition. We support the provision in House Bill 778 that would allocate 40% of tax revenue from mobile sports betting to create a grant fund that would advance youth sports programs in areas that have experienced a disproportionately high rate of juvenile crime. We all know there's just many issues facing youth sports organizations and their families, particularly as a result of the pandemic and the gap that has widened between those young people who have access to youth sports programs and those who don't. Cost is the primary challenge to youth sports participation, and supporting organizations through the grant funding from this bill would allow them to operate and support even more kids in underserved communities. Free recreational programs are still available, but far fewer even than before the pandemic, and fewer intramural programs in high school and middle school, et cetera, and less often now in many traditional sports. It's on the decline. And kids from underserved communities have less access to recreational space and youth sports, and many of those are minority children as well. We also know there's many benefits to the participation in youth sports. It improves mental and emotional health. The 2019 study found that children who reported no exercise at all were twice as likely to have mental health problems than those who had more exercise. Regular physical activity improves overall physical health and reduces the risk of chronic disease long term. So a lot of the medical issues that are suffer from, obesity, of course, and diabetes, as well. And we know that trauma-informed coaching and youth development techniques are infused in many of these programs that we would be supporting through this bill, those like sports-based youth development programs such as Duluth Rookie Basketball and Sane Foundation in St. Paul, who would definitely utilize this funding to serve more kids and keep them healthy and away from juvenile crime. And finally, the intentional use of youth sports to achieve these wonderful benefits can keep youth from getting involved in the juvenile justice system in the first place. And so this deterrent is something that we know youth sports can help us achieve. So thank you for allowing me to speak to you today, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Ms. Fitzgerald Mosley. And from one former hurdler to another, happy International Women's Day.
Thank you. Same to you, Madam Chair.
Members, so we will move to member discussion and questions. Seeing none, Mr. Chair, I'll give it up. There we go. Representative Lucero.
No, I think we're done. I think you called me.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, or Madam Chair, and thank you, Mr. Chair. My question can be for honestly anybody, any of the testifiers or yourself, but we heard several commentators regard to expertise, and the tribes have expertise in this field. Is there anything in the Constitution or treaties or stature, what is the reason to date that the tribes, for the most part, I'm sure there's exceptions, but for the most part, have a monopoly in the gambling arena? And again, does that come to something beyond statute? I guess is my first question.
Chair Stevenson.
Well, Madam Chair, Representative Lucero, the history of Indian gaming and gaming in Minnesota is long. We did have, if you recall, a hearing at the beginning of the biennium where we kind of went through a lot of that history of its development. But I'll try and speak kind of briefly to this point and first say that we do have other gaming that happens in Minnesota. You heard examples of that today in the form of charitable gaming and horse racing. The other big notable gaming that happens in Minnesota that is not connected to the tribes is the lottery, of course. So there's substantial amount of gaming in Minnesota. Gaming in Minnesota, class three gaming, which is the kind that you would find at tribal casinos, is not legal. The reason why it happens in tribal casinos is because they are sovereign nations. There are compacts between the state and tribal governments authorizing them to, or not authorizing, recognizing their sovereign right that they had before the state existed to engage in that activity. It's not something that they gained from us. It's something that they've always had. Our laws make Class 3 gaming otherwise illegal, which is why we have to pass a bill to legalize sports betting in Minnesota. The tribes are the subject matter experts on complex gaming in Minnesota because they've been doing it longer, more successfully than anyone else. You can have great confidence when you walk into a tribal casino that if you win at blackjack, you're going to get your money from them. And that's what we want when people are engaging in sports betting. I also note that because of the interplay between state law, federal law, the Indian gaming law, and everything else, Indian gaming is the most heavily regulated gaming in the world. I don't believe that anyone can argue with that, which is another reason why it makes sense to partner with them as we expand gaming in Minnesota or change our gambling laws, maybe a better way to put it, because as I already said, people are betting on sports in the black market every day. It's the biggest change in our gambling law in 40 years.
You're muted, Madam Chair, but I presume you're recognizing me.
Representative Lucero, follow up.
Thank you. And I appreciate that, Mr. Chair. And so I'm not in favor of this bill. I'm going to be voting no. But it's the reason my questioning here is not, again, related to my no vote, but just that it's not a persuasive argument to me anyway. I do recognize that on any subject matter, that there are certainly experts. And in this arena, I will not argue at all, given the history, that the tribes are certainly the experts in this area. But that doesn't mean it has to stay that way. And it doesn't necessarily mean that Minnesota law has to protect that expertise. And I'm just, as I'm listening to this, and I appreciate the very healthy dialogue and the testimony today, as I'm listening to this, I'm just thinking, in any other arena of any other subject matter, if we want to spread that out and help teach others so that they could engage in a similar activity with similar expertise. That's just something in the back of my mind that I'm thinking about. And the reason why it's not necessarily persuasive in the long term that Minnesota statute protects a certain group to maintain expertise in an arena. So again, thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Madam Chair, for this, again, very engaging and healthy conversation.
Representative Rasmussen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I appreciate the conversation and the testifiers today on this bill and the discussion on the amendments. I'm going to be voting no today. I was disappointed that some of the common sense protections that have been adopted in other states were not adopted in this committee. It's my hope that as this bill continues through the process that we will look more closely at problem gambling and what we can do and what we can borrow from other states to try to restrict problem gambling situations and enhance consumer protections for Minnesotans who could be potentially engaging in this expanding market. And so appreciate the conversation today, Madam Chair and Representative Stevenson, and look forward to continued conversations with you and with the stakeholders on this issue.
Thank you, Representative Rasmussen. Representative Haley.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm trying to get my video on here. Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Chair Stevenson, for your work on this very, very complex issue. And as you said, significant change, biggest change in 40 years to our gambling laws. I do recognize the Minnesota Tribal Nation's expertise in this area and their leadership to provide a marketplace for this that would be, as you've stated, you know, a legal marketplace to something that is happening illegally all over our state. And you made some good points on how many other states have done this. I will be a no vote today, chiefly out of my concern for our youth. And I just need to hear more about that. I appreciated Representative Rasmussen's amendment, and it wasn't carried. And just want to acknowledge you know, your comments that you're willing to work on that and that you think there's some additional solutions there to protect youth from you know, making bad decisions and gambling addictions. So I just wanted to call that out, that that's my concern. I know this will go through multiple committees and will continue to have, you know, your focus as with others in the legislature on this work, so that we can get to a point, hopefully, on a bill that all the stakeholders can support, and we can be confident that we're launching into something that we've really thoroughly vetted. So thanks for the testimony today, and again, appreciate the efforts to continue.
Representative O'Driscoll.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and to Chair Stevenson, the bill author, I thank you for the opportunity to have yet another civil conversation on a somewhat complex matter. And I think that this committee has grown to appreciate the importance of the job that we have to do. And as was pointed out by you and pointed out by Representative Haley and others, this is the largest endeavor related to gaming in the state of Minnesota in some 40 years. And you, Mr. Chair, also said it's important to get this right. And I couldn't agree with you more on that. And the amendments that my team offered today were some suggestions that I hope that you take under advisement as we continue to move through this process to help to craft a bill that gets it right for the folks here in the state of Minnesota. And again, I want to underscore how important I think it is that we look at, again, the finite number of dollars that are available for entertainment, and then parsing that pie down even further for gaming. Now we're introducing a new kid on the block for opportunities for entertainment and gaming. That's going to come at the expense of others. And I very much am concerned about how that's going to affect the Fire Relief Associations that have gaming licenses, the VFWs, the Legions, others who support their communities in different ways. And I want to make sure that we are not short shrifting them. And also that, The youth activities that you are looking at, I think we need to make sure that we are targeting some of those dollars to areas that are needed in greater Minnesota and into the metro area, as you pointed out. Unfortunately, today I have to be a no vote. I was hoping that maybe we could clean some of these things up today in committee. I will continue to monitor the progress on this bill, and hopefully we can get it to a point where we have more bipartisan and bicameral support to do this. And again, Mr. Chair, in your words, to do this right. To do it right is better than to do it fast and have to go back and deal with unintended consequences. So, members and Mr. Chair, thank you for your time.
Representative Barr.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just comment before we go to passage here that I personally don't have a problem with sports betting. I have made the pilgrimage down to Iowa many times to place a bet on some different sports, and I would like to save the 130-mile drive around each way to enjoy some sports betting and watching multiple screens at once, while, you know, 10 or 15 different sport contests at the same time. I do have problems with the bill, but that's kind of what this committee process is for. I noticed that none of the amendments that were offered by our side of the aisle was accepted today, but I did notice that the author has made, he does recognize there's some problems, and we're going to be working on this, and he did say there's six more committee stops, so I would like to see some of the changes, some changes for the things that were addressed today. The paramutuals be included, maybe open it up even farther than that, the full tab people or the Lions clubs and fire people. I would like to see some. If we're going to open up the gaming stuff, we should probably take a little bit broader look. If we're going to do this major, biggest change in 40 years, it's a good time to be all-inclusive and some of the other problems that we have, so that we don't adversely affect some of the other things, like the nonprofits that use pull tabs, things like that. So while I have concerns, I will vote yes today to move this on to the other six committee stops, or five, or however many more it's going to have before we get somewhere, get it to the floor. But with the recognition that if the concerns I have aren't addressed before we get to the final passage, I will be a no vote at that time. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Barr. Finally, seeing no other hands raised, I do have a question, Mr. Chair, and I'm hopeful that you will be willing to address the supplier license language that Sports Radar had testified on earlier. And I know you had
multiple conversations as this has kind of gone through the drafting process, but can you just comment on how that might change or evolve as we go through the rest of the committee process?
Yeah, I think it's a very important issue. I think it ties in very directly to the concerns that we have about the integrity of the game, concerns that, you know, let's not beat around the bush. We're brought into sharp relief by news that came yesterday that an NFL player was suspended for a year for betting on sports. So I think that language is important, and I'm definitely inclined to figure out a way to adopt it. I don't know that it's entirely controversial, and I think that in one of these upcoming committee stops, I said yesterday at the press conference it had 6 committee stops, and then before we got here even today, it grew to 7. So we'll see how many committees we have to go through, but we have lots of opportunities to add that language and fix some of the other issues, and I you have my commitment that we will work on that.
Thank you for that. Representative Barr, your hand is still raised. Do you have a follow-up or another question before we move to vote?
No, Madam Chair. Sorry.
Not a problem. Just wanted to double check. All right. Chair Stevenson, we will move to your closing comments.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, members of the committee, for what I thought was a really wonderful conversation today. Thank you also to the testifiers who came and spoke. I think this was a really good conversation, a really good first step in what will be a long process of revising the bill. I hope that the members who are voting today, I heard many of them say that they would continue to monitor the bill and be open-minded to the possibility of supporting it down the road. And I hope that that bears out, because I'm going to work hard to try and address some of the concerns, particularly related to young people access to it, because I share those concerns that Representative Rasmussen and Representative Haley raised, and I think we do need to modify the bill to address them. I'm just trying to find the correct approach to do that, and I'm not sure we're quite there yet. But ultimately, this is an idea whose time has come, and it's time for us to enable this marketplace before we have even more black market penetration in Minnesota. Anyone who watched the Super Bowl, it felt like every third advertisement was about sports betting. And every time one of those advertisements came on, someone somewhere in Minnesota went to Bovada or some other online website and placed an illegal bet. We don't want those people in that illegal marketplace. We want them to be in the legitimate marketplace. And we want to use the money to good ends, to fund people like Benita Fitzgerald Mosley and her great organization and the great work that they're doing that she was so kind to come and describe about to us today. So we've got a bunch of committee stops left, but I'm asking for your vote today. And thank you for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. All right, Representative Stevenson renews his motion that House File 778, as amended, be recommended to be re-referred to the State Government Finance and Elections Committee, and the clerk will take the roll.
Chair Stevenson.
Aye.
Stevenson, aye. Chair Cotizza-Watoon.
Aye.
Cotizza-Watoon, aye. Representative O'Driscoll.
O'Driscoll, no.
O'Driscoll, no. Representative Barr.
Barr, aye.
Barr, aye. Representative Carlson.
Carlson, aye.
Carlson, aye. Representative Davney.
Davney, aye.
Davney, aye. Representative Elkins.
Elkins, aye.
Elkins, aye. Representative Haley.
Haley, no.
Haley, no. Representative Cagle.
Cagle, aye.
Cagle, aye. Representative Lee.
Lee, aye.
Lee, aye. Representative Lilly.
Lilly, aye.
Lilly, aye. Representative Lislegard.
Aye.
Lislegard, aye. Representative Lucero.
Lucero, no.
Lucero, no. Representative Olson.
Aye.
Olson, aye. Representative Farr.
Farr, aye.
Farr, aye. Representative Rasmussen.
Rasmussen, no.
Rasmussen, no. Representative Richardson.
Aye.
Richardson, aye. Representative Tice.
Tice, no. Tice, aye. I'm going to change mine.
Tice, aye.
Members, there were 14 ayes and 4 nays, and the motion prevails. House File 778, as amended, is recommended to be re-referred to the State Government Finance and Elections Committee. So, Chair Stevenson, you are on your way, and we have no further business, so today's meeting is adjourned.